Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special first edition of Secretary of Shade. I am your host, DDM, and this is powered by WYPR and CARE. Welcome to all of our first-time listeners. Welcome to all of our existing cabinet members who are joining me here from our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Secretary of Shade. So if this is your first time tuning in to Secretary of Shade, SOS, my name is DDM once again. This whole concept of this show, podcast, it's had so many iterations. It started with me reading political books, doing commentary on the news, on social media, something that was very happenstance for me. It wasn't something that I planned out. And then over time, I just amassed the following. My cabinet members are the people who follow the show, pushed me to do a more solid format show. So I went and started my YouTube channel, Secretary of Shade. And we've been doing that since about 2018. We've amassed a good following. We have a lot of members. And that brought us here to NPR and YPR. And this is not your typical political show, right? This is a conversation with your friend, your neighbor next door, your coworker. This is not where we over-explain or under-explain anything. We just talk about what's going on, the facts, and my opinion on said facts. That's it, and that's all. This episode, we are going to be discussing the upcoming Democratic National Convention and how we got here. How did we get here? So the Democratic National Convention starts on August the 19th. We have a lot going on going into this convention. It reads like an episode of Game of Thrones. It's unlike anything that we've seen recently. You have incumbent president dropping out of the race. Some say he was pressured to drop out of the race. You have existing VP who is now the presidential nominee for all intents and purposes. I mean, at this point, the convention is just a formality. And said nominee has also chosen her vice presidential pick. So you have a woman, okay, half black, half Indian, with a running mate who is this older white man from Minnesota, conservative leaning, but liberal leaning, but it works. And now we're going into a convention where really it kind of checks a lot of boxes, but we don't know if the people are going to bite. But how did we get here? How did we go from Joseph R. Biden dropping out of the race to Kamala Harris picking up the baton to lead the Democratic Party into this year's general election on November 5th? And it all starts, oddly enough, with the 2019 election cycle. So picture it, right? 2019, 2018, somewhere around that time, we have Donald Trump in office. Now, for some people, they absolutely loved that time. For some people, couldn't stand that time. It felt like we was in the Hunger Games, okay? But you have Joe Biden entering the race. Now, during this time, there were a lot of qualified candidates. You had Bernie Sanders returning after his unsuccessful run in 2016. You have our now Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg. You had in that run, I believe, Elizabeth Warren, who I was a Warren head, was in that race as well. So it was a really, really, really robust field of candidates. Okay. But Joseph Biden ended up being the winner of the 2020 Democratic cycle for president. He won that nomination. So let's take a look at the facts, right? So in 2020, he was the front runner. So, of course, you know, you got the name recognition, you know, for the people who are more left-leaning or independents who did not like the current Trump presidency. They're like, oh, Joe Biden, let's return back to great times. He was with Obama. Let's do it, right? And in the beginning, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm. But when I looked back to research for this episode, I found that a lot of the problems that he eventually ended up dropping out of the race this cycle in 2024, a lot of the problems that he dropped out for in this election cycle already had presented themselves in 2020. They just got pushed to the side. So even then, he was struggling in debates at times. Okay, I don't know if a lot of you remember that those series of presidential debates for the 2020 election cycle, and Kamala Harris, who we all know now, ended up being his running mate for VP, had took a shot at him about the busing campaign that he had in the 70s that he ran about public school busing.
To hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
So in those Iowa caucuses, in those early primaries, Biden was not doing well. And it was due to debate performances, campaign messaging, appearances, which are all of the same things that we ran into in this latest election cycle. When we look at Joe Biden in the 2020 election, we do have to question how race, how even as a black person myself, our perception of race in this country plays a part into how we do politics. Because when I talk to like my grandmother, when I talk to my mom, my aunts, people that I see out on the street, they didn't pick Joe Biden because they thought he was the most qualified, or even though he was qualified, but he wasn't the best choice in their mind, ideally. But a lot of black people, and it shows in the polling in South Carolina, picked him because they felt like he was the person that most of the country would vote for against Trump. You know, and that says a lot, because in a field where you had Bernie Sanders, you had Pete Buttigieg, you had Elizabeth Warren and a host of other people in that pool who were all qualified, who were all fresh faces, who were all well spoken. Elizabeth Warren had a great policy laid out. And you had Kamala Harris also in that field as well. And none of those people were chosen, and we got to be real with ourselves. They didn't go with Pete Buttigieg because he's a gay man, albeit he's a gay man with a family, former military, all of that good stuff. But when I talk to other black folks, they're going to say, the Midwest and the Deep South is not voting for a gay man for president, at least not yet. So that takes him off the board. Then you have Elizabeth Warren, who very well spoken, very good in debates, had very strong policy for what she would do should she get that office. But I feel like Elizabeth Warren's issue was she had shades of Hillary Clinton. So when you talk to a lot of black folks, they're like, we're going to go with Robinette. Okay, we're going to go with Biden. That's who we're choosing. That's what it's going to give. So in a lot of ways, the black community actually brought Joe Biden back to life. He was about to be done. If it was not for that South Carolina primary, he would have been gone. Fast forward to 2024, in particular, we have him, dropping out of the race July 21st, 2024, a day that will live in infamy. Okay. Now, me personally, I was kind of annoyed that he made this announcement on a Sunday. You know, I'm getting ready to watch House of the Dragon. Sunday is my rest day. I got my pizza and ice cream. I'm ready to chill. And then out of nowhere, my phone starts going off. My mother texts me. Then my best friend texts me. Then I'm getting alerts from Facebook and Twitter. People who follow me online, they're like, oh, my God, did you see the message? So I go online, and this man had dropped out the race on a Sunday afternoon. So it all started the night of this debate. Okay, picture it. We're all in our living rooms or, you know, by our smartphones, wherever we watch the news. We're tuned in for this debate. And baby, Joe Biden walks out. Now, for those of you who watch House of the Dragon, it was given Viserys Targaryen as soon as he walks out. He opens his mouth and I'm like, is this Paddy Considine up here or is this a presidential candidate? Because I can't, okay? Seemed confused at times. Words were slurring. I mean, we know Joe Biden has always had a stuttering issue, so we're kind of accustomed to that. But it just was a train wreck. Now, people have been talking about his health status, his ability to endure another 4 years in the White House. But this was the first time where I feel like the American public really got a chance to view it on display in such a flagrant way. So the debate happens, and it's a dumpster fire. Absolute dumpster fire. So that's when the panic bells went off. So after that debate, Biden had a meeting with his family at Camp David that weekend after the debate, in which the family was saying, no, Joe, you know, stay in the race. You got this. You just had a bad night. Now, of course, your family going to back you up, which is why sometimes you have to kind of look at your support system. I know for me as an artist, I never played my records for my friends for real feedback. I always played them for complete strangers or people who weren't as emotionally invested in me, right? Because when you love somebody, of course you're going to tell them they can do it or they can move forward. Even if in your right mind, you would say, I don't know about that, but it's your dad, it's your uncle, it's your husband. So of course you're going to say that, right? Now, they telling him to stay in the race. Him and his team are going with this. It was just a bad night thing, right? But then Democrats started talking, okay? So after July 4th, Senator Mark Warner, who's a Democrat from Virginia, he tried to get a group of Democrats together to hold a meeting with Biden to get him to leave the race and drop out. However, that meeting never took place because somebody leaked that he was trying to get that meeting together. So it's low-key giving coup, okay? It's low-key giving coup. So that meeting didn't happen, okay? After Biden found out about this is Game of Thrones, y'all, I'm sorry. After Biden found out about the meeting, he then puts out a letter on July the 8th, saying he's going to continue his reelection bid. I am firmly committed to staying in this race, to running this race to the end, and to beating Donald Trump. Okay? That's July 8th. July the 10th, George Clooney, yes, the actor, George Clooney, pens an open op-ed letter in the New York Times calling for Biden to step aside. Clooney said that the Biden he saw at a June fundraiser was the same Biden the world saw at the debate and that the president had declined since taking the Oval Office. So George Clooney isn't an authority on politics or anything like that, but he is a human being with, I think, good sense. So he's like, I don't know about this. Then Nancy Pelosi goes on MSNBC. Okay, declines to endorse Joe Biden, and she says this, and I quote, it's up to the president to decide if he's going to run. She said, even if that was a decision Biden had already seemed to have made. Now, I thought this was hilarious because after she made that comment, and you could see on air if you watched that interview, as soon as she said it, she realized she made a boo-boo. And so after the interview, she's walking through the halls, I believe it's of Congress or one of those places. And a reporter comes up to her and asks her, hey, you know, sis, what did you mean by that? And she got kind of snippy with the reporter. And this is my thing, right? You cannot say stuff like that and then think that nobody's going to ask you about it. You know, and that wasn't the only time that Nancy went on MSNBC. She also said on another MSNBC interview, I think it's a legitimate question to say, is this an episode or is this a condition in regards to Joe Biden? So Nancy kind of sent out some dog whistles on her own in regards to this. Okay. So you have a lot that's playing up against him. So you have all of this going on, but then you have Representative Jamie Raskin, the Maryland House Democrat who led Trump's second impeachment, said that he wrote a letter to Joe Biden. Now, this was on July 6th, encouraging the president that there was no shame in taking a well-deserved bow. So you have that going on. Then this is another Nancy Pelosi. First of all, love Nancy Pelosi to death, but this woman is busy. But also, too, this woman holds a lot of power in the Democratic Party, even today still. Okay, so Nancy Pelosi had a private meeting with Joe Biden where she told him that polling showed he couldn't beat Trump and that he could ultimately hurt the Democrats' chances of winning the House in November. Biden was like, nah, Nance, I got that, Nance. We gonna do this, seeing that he had seen polls stating otherwise. So Nancy gets on the phone and asks Biden's longtime advisor to get on the line to talk the data with him. Okay. So Nancy's like, bruh, you're not getting it. Okay. This is not going well for you. Okay. So she calls his homeboy on the line and like, look, can you show him the numbers? Cause right now the math is just not math and he refuses to hear that. So Nancy Pelosi is busy in this whole process, but also too, the reason why it's important to look at the things that she said in these different meetings is it shows you that when certain people say certain things, and this is in both parties, in any party, the soldiers will fall in line. And I think Nancy Pelosi making these statements on public television and having these meetings behind the scenes kind of was the green light for other Democrats to say, yeah, it's time to press pause on this one. All right, so he announces that he's dropping out, and we hear the infamous speech, and now a new front runner has entered the race, which changes everything.
When you elect me to this office, I promise to always level with you, to tell you the truth. Sacred cause of this country is larger than any one of us. And those of us who cherish that cause cherish it so much, a cause of American democracy itself, must unite to protect it. You know, in recent weeks, it's become clear to me that I need to unite my party in this critical endeavor. I believe my record as president, my leadership in the world, my vision for America's future, all merited a second term, but nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation.
Enter Kamala Harris. Now, we know Kamala Harris is the current vice president, Howard University graduate, a.k.a. fraternity member, sorority member, I'm sorry. prosecutor, district attorney, top prosecutor in San Francisco in 2003, first woman and the first black person elected to serve as California's attorney general. Okay. Then she ran for senator in 2017, California junior senator. All right. Ran for president for the 2020 election. Of course, she was unsuccessful. Now, at the time, people on Biden's team for that 2020 election were a little skeptical about him choosing her as his VP pick because of that whole exchange they had in the debate about Biden's school busing policy and things like that. But, you know, Biden got over it. He saw the bigger picture. And eventually, you know, they went with Kamala. Now, while Kamala is the VP of the United States, she had a key role in a lot of the big policies that a lot of people don't talk about from the Biden administration. She launched a nationwide Fight for Reproductive Freedoms tour, highlighting the harm caused by abortion bans. She set a new record for the most tie-breaking votes by a vice president in the history of the Senate. Her vote helped pass the Inflation Reduction Act and the American Rescue Plan, which provided COVID relief funds, including stimulus payments. So for all of those people, because we see this a lot, like, bring Trump back in because we got the stimulus money. He didn't even give that to you. Okay? like, this is why I love doing this podcast, because when you look at the black and white and the facts, it dispels a lot of the noise out there, right? So she did that. Her tie-breaking vote also confirmed Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court, okay? Now, that was the pros. Let's get into the cons, possibly, depending on how you look at it, right? Joe Biden also called upon Kamala Harris to lead addressing the root causes of migration and the whole border situation. It did take her 6 months to plan a trip to the border, which is why they started that whole border czar conversation and things like that. Now, while border crossings, they've actually fallen this year, 2024, it remains to be seen kind of if she can like really tout that, because her work with the border, it wasn't the best. Let's be real here. Wasn't the worst either. But when you're sitting in these chairs, you have to be really on it. OK, you have to be really, really on it. So this is the person you have running for VP. A first in many arenas, a former attorney general, district attorney, first black and Asian vice president. I mean, it's a lot of pluses. It's a lot of, she's broken a lot of ground in politics. So she becomes the de facto candidate for the Democratic ticket. Now, the interesting thing is, we didn't know, or at least I didn't know, how this would pan out. And the convention hasn't happened yet as of this taping. So we don't know what's going to happen on that convention floor. I doubt anything dramatic because we just don't have enough time at this point to really see if any candidates would be viable outside of Kamala. And I don't think that the Democrats really have another chip to play, quite frankly, in this arena. So now we have Kamala spearheading the campaign. Now, she has raised a lot of funds. She raised something like $80 million in the first 24 hours of her campaign. She's raised a total, I believe, of $310 million so far for her campaign, because it does cost money. There's also been a lot of calls. I was on one call black gay men for Kamala Harris. Don Lemon was actually on that call, and a few other leaders in the black gay community were on that call. You have women for Harris, white women for Harris, white dudes for Harris, Zoom calls. Like, everything is a Zoom call. It's like the most 2024 thing ever, right? Like, everybody's on a Zoom call to raise money. So there's a lot of enthusiasm. The polling is showing that she is trending upward. She's had a rally in Georgia, which is a key battleground state, in a state that they have to keep in the Democratic Party to be successful in November. So her campaign has been met with a lot of enthusiasm. And let's be real here. Prior to her announcement and Joe Biden dropping out, it was looking very gloomy for the Democratic Party. And, you know, we've all talked to our friends. We've, you know, watched the news. We've been around. There was not a lot of enthusiasm for Joe Biden, and that's just the reality. Okay? Now, there's a feeling of new hope. There's a reinvigoration of the Democratic Party and more so the left side as well. So we're going to see how this works coming into this convention. It should be exciting. And she's already picked her VP nominee, which a lot of people were campaigning for this job. But in the end, Tim Walz ended up being the winner of the 2024 Vice President Hunger Games. All right. So Tim Walz, 60 years old. He's a veteran and a hunter. He's from rural Nebraska. You can't get more different from Kamala than that. Moved to Minnesota with his wife. He was a high school teacher, football coach. And one day, he decided to run for politics. Now, the story is that he decided to run for office back in around 2005 or so, somewhere between 2005, 2006, after some of his students were denied entry to a 2004 George W. Bush campaign event because organizers found out they were Democrats. In 2006, he won the race to represent Minnesota's first congressional district, and he also, by doing that, flipped a Republican seat in a rural part of the state. So that's very important for the Harris campaign, because you want somebody who can speak with the more conservative voter and also who can speak to the rural parts, the Rust Belt, flyover country, places like that, the Deep South. You need somebody who can speak to that, because Kamala is not going to resonate with a lot of those voters, okay? In Congress, he was kind of viewed as a moderate Democrat. Now, oddly enough, he was a strong supporter of gun rights. He got an A rating from the National Rifle Association. He praised George Bush for proposing to expand the Army National Guard forces, but did criticize him for not having a clear direction in the Iraq War and didn't want him to send any more troops. Okay. Now, I like this as a pick because this is somebody who couldn't be any farther from what a lot of Kamala Harris's ideology is, right? So you have somebody who can provide that other perspective. Now, what's interesting is in February 2018, he won the governor's seat, okay? He defeated a Republican opponent by more than 10 percentage points. So this is somebody who constantly is able to flip seats. That's a huge asset to this campaign. After February 2018, when the shooting at Parkland, Florida, at Douglas High School, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High, happened, he went ahead and he donated all the money he had taken from the NRA to a charity and publicly pushed for background checks and eliminating reciprocal carrier agreements between the states. Okay? Then he did all that and still won re-election in 2022. While he's been the governor in Minnesota, The governorship has enshrined the right to abortion, okay, in the state, allow undocumented immigrants to obtain a driver's license, which the right is going to hit him on that, expanded background checks for gun transfers, legalized recreational marijuana, and offered protections for people seeking or providing gender-affirming care. They're going to light him up on that, on the right, too. So he not bulletproof, but looking at this resume, I understand why he was chosen. He also did the genius thing of calling Trump and Vance a threat to democracy, but saying that they were weird. So he goes, and this is a quote, "Who's asking for this crazy stuff? Who's asking to raise the price of insulin? Who's asking to get rid of birth control? Who's sitting in a bar in Racine, Wisconsin saying, you know what we really need? We need to ban Animal Farm. Nobody is." Later, and this was an interview he did for MSNBC, later adding, yes, they're weird. They prove that every day. It's an observation.
These guys are just weird. That's who they are. So it isn't much else. Don't give them the power. Don't lift these guys up like they're sometimes heroes. Everybody in this room knows, I know it as a teacher, a bully has no self-confidence. A bully has no strength. They have nothing.
So this is a 60-year-old former, you know, served this country, white man from flyover country who loves his guns, but also realizes that there needs to be checks and balances on them. And he's saying that, you know, something's just not right here. And what I like about this pick, once again, it shows even temperament, the ability to see both sides and come to a resolution. So it's going to be interesting going into this convention, seeing how unified Democrats are, seeing if there's any reinvigoration of the party. Because the Democrat Party also has to produce new stars. Because Nancy Pelosi can't be around forever. A lot of these people are just, they're dying out. They're moving on. They're hitting that retirement age. Now, I personally got contacted about the Democratic National Convention, trying to work out tickets for that. But it's interesting because prior to Kamala Harris picking up the baton and becoming a nominee, it looked like it was going to be a go. Well, since Kamala Harris has announced, I got put on hold because the demand for tickets skyrocketed. Everybody is going to be at this convention now. So it's going to be interesting to see how it looks. Hopefully I get to go. If I don't, I'll be watching on TV with all you folks to see what happens. But that concludes this episode and how we got here to what is essentially now Kamaland, the Kamala Harris Party, at least for now. So it's going to be interesting to see how things move forward and where the Democratic Party goes from here. We still have a little bit of time before the election, less than 100 days. We're in the 90s now, going into the 80s, 80-some days before the election. So it's a good amount of time, but it's not a lot of time at all. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. But I do want to thank you all for tuning in to Secretary of Shade. Don't forget to follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/Secretary of Shade. We also have a TikTok, Secretary of Shade. Just type it on in and you can find us there as well. Special thanks to CARE, our sponsor, and WYPR. And we will see you soon. I'm your host, DDM. You guys be blessed and have a great day.